Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Celtic Stuff Live on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider of audio and video coverage for the Boston Celtics. I'm Justin. He's John. We're back. We missed a week, and the beginning of that week that we missed was worth missing. But we're back for the part of, for the week that's worth being here for. Celtics definitely struggle against the 76ers. Not looking healthy, still getting through all of that. Jason Tatum, obviously, having quite a bit of time off. Jaylen Brown stepping up in the meantime. Kemba's back. He looks like he might be back, too. Physically, I mean. And then also, Tatum's back. Boy, was he hot to start his first game back, John. So it's nice to watch this team. Hopefully get healthy, but the play of some of the younger guys in the meantime has also been impressive. I can't tell you, I'm heartbroken that I'm going to call him, what, P Rabbit? I'm not sure I like the fast PP.
That's what she said.
Exactly.
Well, you know, it's funny, a week ago, we would have been in a very different place, right? I mean, they went 0-3, losing, you know, obviously 2 to Philly, and losing that really stinker of a game on a Sunday afternoon against the Knicks. But you know, and yeah, you had Kemba coming back through that stretch, but you know, that was, well, they had a great game before that against Orlando, the bench came through and played well. That was a tough stretch there. And how many times have we watched a Sunday afternoon game kind of go sideways?
Man, somebody texted me, a Philly fan down here, and he was like, what is going on with the Celtics? I'm like, early Sunday afternoon, bro. It's been happening for years. It doesn't even matter who's on the team.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, change the names. For whatever reason, when those green and white jerseys are on there Sunday afternoon, it's always hit or miss, you know?
We've talked about this forever. It's so weird that it just doesn't go away.
Well, and you also, and the other thing was, is the Knicks were really kind of licking some wounds going into that game, too. So yeah. they had a lot to be playing for. They were clearly the more motivated of the teams. The Celtics had a bench and just Jaylen Brown, I should say, and that's it. That group was not going to go, you know, unless they brought the same effort they had against Orlando, it was going to be tough, and they didn't, and there you go. So, you know, and then Philly games, they were close. I mean, look, the fact that those games were as close as they were, frankly, was probably...
Yeah, it tells you everything you need to know.
Absolutely. So you take that, and then you run off a few wins here, you know, and you start to do some things here the last two nights, both against... you know, the Bulls, and then the night before beating Cleveland. Again, neither team great, neither team going to probably make plans for this summer to be in the playoffs, but that was a bloodletting in both instances that the Celtics needed to get the bench going, to get Kemba going, to get Jason Tatum going, coming back from COVID. It was a really exactly what the doctor called for.
Yeah, and how about Jaylen Brown having 40-point games already this season? I think this is one of those – it's so interesting because the bench, there are players that have stepped up and have emerged as a result of these injuries, which could really pay off big time in the postseason. It definitely helped Brad figure out maybe where these rotations should look once they're fully healthy. And then – Jaylen Brown just gets tons of confidence, becomes the go-to man for so many games already this season. And I remember having an argument with my son probably right about before Tatum went out. And, you know, it was when everybody was just vibing on the Tatum versus Brown sort of debate. Who's the better player? Who would you rather have? And, you know, it was just getting annoying in the media, but he was buying into it. And he kept coming at me from the Tatum argument of it. And I was like, listen, I love them both. I just don't think that the separation between Brown and Tatum is as big as you think it is. And he's like, yeah, the defense. I'm like, no, I mean the offense. Look at how efficient Brown is right now, and he's willing to be the number two fiddle. He's willing to do the other things. He doesn't have to be the man, and I'm not saying that you don't still put the ball in Tatum's hands when you're looking for a game-winning shot. I'm just saying you don't have to put it in his hands every time, and Brown has proven that he's capable of carrying an offense. We've had this debate for a long time. If they weren't on a contending team, maybe even before we drafted Tatum, you know, how would these players develop if they were to develop in a normal rebuilding scenario where they're not good at first, but they get all the minutes, et cetera, et cetera. Looks like the Celtics didn't have to make that sacrifice to get where they wanted to go with a guy like Brown.
Right. And they're ready made in Jaylen. He's ready made and ready to go from day one to compete in the playoffs. You don't have to take those bad habits that a guy like Trae Young, you know, is trying to work. Well, maybe trying to work out of his game. I'm not sure. But, you know, those bad habits that, you know, can be enabled on some of those bad teams that just need to have their guys play, like Trae Young, now they're trying to compete, and he doesn't have the habits he needs for success because, well, that was enabled. And that's now they're trying to figure it out, and it's not going necessarily as well as they might hope sometimes. So, you know, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, that's, you know, I think I'd
there were consequences. Ahead of, there were consequences to competing while developing.
Yes.
But the fact that the team was patient, they didn't give these guys away for nothing. I mean, how does the James Harden versus Jaylen Brown trade, debate, conversation, salary comparison look now? Is it really? I mean, do you want to give up? He has the ability to generate offense. Is he Harden? No. But that difference is a lot less than you would think, and the defense is way better.
Oh, yeah. Well, I can't wait to see what James Harden in the playoffs looks like. But, yeah, no, it, you're right. It's a huge win for the Celtics to not, you know, kept their powder dry, not gone out and try to get the one-time MVP in favor of a guy who's on the right
or side. Any other number of trades that might have happened sure. Over the years.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Jimmy Butler, Paul George, who else we got out there? I mean, you know, the list is endless here. You know, I think the Celtics can feel pretty good about where they sit right now in terms of those two guys being the heart of where they're going, and certainly after two wins, they should be feeling really good about where they're headed in the Eastern Conference. You know, I think that the main question, you know, remains is what about everybody else? But, you know, to put that aside for a second, you know, and to talk about what it is, I mean, the efficiency that, as you said, the efficiency with which Jaylen Brown is scoring. I mean, that 32 points in 19 minute deal, I mean, that's what the hell is that?
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
Three quarters, man. Boom, pow.
Yeah, I mean, 19 minutes, you get 30 points. I mean, that's a That's a special, special.
That's when you know you're a superior athlete who has figured out how to finish.
Yeah.
He's so patient now. He realizes that not only is he physically faster than most of the players in the NBA, but he's holding his dribble long enough to be able to take advantage of that. But he's also holding on to his head long enough not to blow it. Mm-hmm. You know, when he telegraphs it, anybody can recover. Now he's got moves. I mean, just look at the step back when he gets into the body and steps back. I mean, there's shades of Harden just watching him do that.
I think, yeah, and I think that his ability to get into the mid range and finish continually over and over and over, and he's hitting some tough shots, but he's also able to get so many good looks in that area because that's obviously an area where the NBA is not focused on stopping right now, and he's just feasting. He's feasting on those mid range shots to an absurd degree, and if he's able to kind of keep going with that, right, and kind of just live in that area, I mean, he's a three level scorer for sure. You know, he was two level scorer before. Now he's a consistently great three level scorer. You know, and then on top of that, let's not forget the playmaking. You know, the playmaking where he's now a guy who you trust not only with the ball in his hands, but to create for others. It kind of goes back and you look at the idea of what to do with Hayward. And, you know, it's
funny
sucks.
You do that because I was definitely – that's been on my mind. I want to talk about that.
I mean, it sucks. It sucks in terms of the depth of this team to have – you know, forget about what he did. But to have a guy who's a 30-minute-a-night guy – who was consistent and who was solid and who did his job, and you know, you could count on what that was for 30 minutes a night. But now conversely, right, the Celtics kind of went in and said, look, no, we believe in these two guys, Tatum and Brown. We believe that the ball should be in their hands. We believe those are the guys who are going to lead us to where we're going to go. We could spend $30 million a year and bring back a guy on the other side of 30 who's had, you know, problems. And no doubt Hayward's done well in the Hornets. I'm not trying to denigrate that. I'm only saying, look, hey, now we're able to see what Tatum and Brown can do. If the Celtics can reallocate that asset, you know, that $30 million to now be a $20 million guy or two $10 million guys to build a deeper team around the probably the most efficient scorer in the league in Jaylen Brown and a guy who can probably get his shot over anyone at any time in Jason Tatum, I'm not really sure anyone should be looking at that any other way than a real win for the Celtics and Danny Ainge.
Yeah, I couldn't agree. I couldn't agree more. It's interesting. I'll go ahead and transition over to Hayward just because he's had some really big nights. He's scoring just a tick underneath what Brown is per night, but he's also 100% the best scorer on the Hornets. I think what we loved about him was that he was also willing to be the second fiddle, but how vindicating for him after a frustrating, you know, stretch in his career. Like, great on him. I don't think he's going to win championships, though. Look at their record. You know, that's just not indicative of their, like, team success, right? And his stats would come down on any team that's built to win an actual championship. That's all I'm getting at with those numbers. But he would be great to have here. It's just too bad we never got to see him healthy with all those guys playing together. Like, I think this outcome was pretty inevitable. But the thing that is going to be nice, that would have been even nicer had he been healthy, was the fact that the load for the scores wouldn't have to be as huge. I mean, think about how often some of these guys ought to be able to take nights off. I mean, we already were able to deal with how much time off for Tatum. And if Kemba had been healthy heading into that, or if we were just talking about taking some nights off, guys ought to be able to get some rest and stay fresh. And that's actually my biggest concern now that they've had to postpone a bunch of these games is how do we make sure that they get rest? Sean Grady was talking about makes so much sense for them to stick around in Chicago and play a makeup game on Wednesday night, especially with the gap in games. I realize they had a back-to-back, you know, leading into Chicago, but they'd still have a night off. They wouldn't have to travel, and they could just play that game and get it out of the way. I'm a little concerned about what it's going to look like for this team down the stretch, because they're going to end up either maybe they'll extend the season if it's impacted a lot of teams, but there's a good chance they're going to have a lot of games crammed into a short period of time heading into the postseason. So it's nice to see that some of the players, the younger guys that they might have to rely on during that stretch, have gained some confidence in the meantime, because I just don't know how you deal with that.
Well, and it's what we're talking about Jalen. I mean, Jalen has had an incredible weight he's been carrying with this team. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's been doing a lot of heavy lifting.
He's like, I can do more.
And right.
There were parts of that game I thought against the Bulls where I'm like, yeah, he's looking like he's doing
a lot
of heavy lifting. Yeah, and he's in great shape. I mean, this isn't a shot at, but you know, look, it's a lot of heavy lifting, and so, you know, he needs Kemba and Tatum to come back, take that load off of him, and I think those guys are willing. That's the beautiful part, is we spent a lot of time.
Not only willing, able.
Absolutely. And we talked a lot in the last show about, well, how are we going to break up the minutes? Well, you know, now, or the shots, I should say. Well, you know, by being able to maybe redistribute that a little bit, get a little bit of some time here to Brown to, you know, play a little bit more of a normal role, I think that helps itself out. And
nights off. Well oiled. All of a sudden they look deep with this really young roster, and Jeff Teague hasn't even been crap except for game one, basically, at this point. Oh. So interesting that their depth is coming from a lot of the younger players. Also interesting that Grant Williams seems to be the one that's struggling, and they're still getting all this depth. And then, you know, Pritchard gets hurt, and they're seemingly quite confident. I mean, even the games that they lost, I mean, they were losing to Philly, a team that they were just outsized immensely, a team that they need to – they really need Tatum. Matchup-wise, they need Tatum to beat Philly. So I don't think any of us were surprised by those losses. But honestly, the depth is shocking. It's shocking.
Yeah.
And so that's the good news. The good news is the depth is there. I think they can give guys nights off. I think they're going to have to give Kemba nights off. They really are going to have to.
Yeah. There'll be shots. There'll be opportunities, you know, for Jalen and Jason to be the guy. And there's going to be opportunities for Smart to be a little bit more than the third guy out there, which may drive some people crazy. But
post-game, well, I mean, let me know when you're ready to talk about Smart, because his ball handling – and his dribbling is really improved.
Well, you know, that's the role that I think I've always felt like, while he can defend a whole bunch of positions, his best way to impact the Celtics is as a point guard. You know, I don't, you can put him in different positions. And you could say, you know, he's this and that. And he's, you know, is he a natural one man who can, you know, create space and kind of do the things that we're seeing Peyton Pritchard do? No. But his read of the game is so strong. He's able to get where he wants to get to a lot of times with his size and his speed and his strength, and now his ball handling. I think it's been more a question of decision-making on his part, right? But I agree with you. I mean, he's taken a step up, and him unlocking that kind of playmaking gene, I think, you know, you've seen –
Do you get mad at him when he does those passes, like, behind the backs?
No.
Or are you thinking at this point, like, let him figure it out, because it could be really spectacular if he does?
If the behind-the-back pass allows him to get something out off his chest that isn't the, you know, the heat check three, I can live with it. You know?
Do you think he can do it, though? Do you think he can turn that into something at some point? Or does it become the heat check three?
Yeah, no, does he grow that skill to the point where he's...
Yeah,
he's,
does it become actually something not just the behind the back, but just all of that.
His passing?
He's got some really, like, he can really zing them. He makes the decision pretty quickly, not always a good one. But, you know, if the percentage of quick and crisp or hard passes increases in terms of effectiveness... It could be dangerous, right? Yeah, you gotta get the percentage of, you know, failed attempts down. And I'm not even sure they're that high right now. That's kind of my point. I mean, he's starting to dribble into the paint, through the paint, and come back out. We haven't really seen him dribble into those areas that much in the past.
Right. No, I totally agree. I think he's venturing more into the space where the Celtics need him to go to create space for others. You know, I think so much of this is really about trying to fully flesh out a role for him that he can you know, kind of put his hands around and appreciate and not feel like the way that he has to contribute is to shoot the ball. You know, and I'm not against his shooting. There's been a lot of people complaining about his shooting. I'm not one of those guys. I appreciate his shooting, but, you know, there's a time and a place. And when you have Brown, Tatum, and Kemba on your team, you got to be, you know, distant fourth in terms of shots. And so that means you got to pump this guy up so you're getting the max out of his defense. You're getting the max out of his playmaking. And most of all, the winning plays. And if you do all that, you're going to get the most out of Marcus Smart. It's an adjustment for him. But I agree. I think he can unlock it. And I think that's really a key for this team to reach that higher level is they need that fourth guy to fill in all the gaps. And Marcus Smart could be that guy so long as he doesn't let his, you know, sometimes outsized influence of his shooting take over, you know?
How generally refreshing is it, though, to see point guards on the Celtics, not just point guards on the Celtics, meaning Smart and Pritchard, just driving into the paint, and it just does so much for their offense. How many times did we get frustrated over the last couple of years, let alone when things started to get really stagnant in the postseason, where they dribble the ball up and there's nothing going on? You know, getting into the paint, dribbling in, dribbling back out, creates so much more off-the-ball action than just that perimeter swing, which is just so killer for them. Because they all just park out. And when that offense is stagnant like that, dude, I want to shoot myself. I can't even watch it because I'm like, you have all these athletes. We want you to attack in transition. And here's Jaylen Brown leading the NBA in transition, fast break points, right, which is phenomenal. And I want to see more of it. But we do get a lot of it off the defensive turnovers. But then they come down, and if it's not in transition – most of the time, they're not really attacking. And you can go back to the Isaiah Thomas-led teams where to really create what we wanted, you know, he had to go to the rim over and over and over until he basically broke his body.
Yeah.
And in one season, a phenomenal, entertaining season that I'll never forget and I'll always be grateful for. But he destroyed his body. He might have ruined his career that year, you know, and – or maybe his career wouldn't have been as much without him wrecking it. It's hard to say. But he wrecked himself. And that's not the way it should be. You shouldn't – even Kemba, you know, he doesn't finish quite the same way. He doesn't go to the ground as hard as Isaiah, you know, but he attacks the paint. But they need more than that. They need to get in. They need to collapse. And then they need to swing. And then they see the next level is, can they then cut? And they have been doing it a lot with just like Tice, right? We've seen that with some of the cuts on those plays and the little alley-oops and everything else. But even baseline cutters, it's just bringing so much more, so many more dynamics, or it's making the offense so much more dynamic is what I'm trying to say.
I agree, I think that's everyone wants to be the scorer. Everyone wants to be the guy who hits the bucket, you know, hits the winning shot, hits the guy. I mean, that's, you know, and for someone who works so hard to make winning plays, scoring wins games, right? But it takes so much more than that. And, you know, I think that they've been talking, you know, Brad kind of talked about how they've been really working with him about, you know, taking the right time to make the right play. And I think that while he's impeccable timing in the instant, you know, in terms of that playmaking and when to shoot, when to pass and all that, I don't think he's ever really kind of figured out. And I think he is now. And I think, you know, that's why, you know, to go back to Jaylen, his kind of continually pumping up of Marcus Smart in the post game, You know, every few games he'll say, you know, hey, you know, Smart was really there for us. You know, he does all everything that makes it happen. You know, the passes. That's Jalen really pumping up the Marcus Smart factor. And boy, doesn't that make a difference, I think, for Marcus to really buy into that role. And they know they need him to get anywhere, you know. So, hey, that's what they need. Now that they have, you know, Kemba and Tatum coming back, you know, everyone's role is going to be a little bit different, but they're going to need more out of Marcus Smart in that role and less so in the scoring aspects.
All right, so here's the question. Are you ready for some football? There's only one place that has got you covered and one place that we trust, and it's betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use that promo code, baby, CLNS50, for your 50% welcome bonus. Guess what's coming up? That's right. In under 2 weeks, it's Tommy Terrific in the Super Bowl. Can't bet against him, can you? Or maybe you can. I don't know. Do you guys like Mahomes? Probably not if you're listening to this show. So don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. Don't forget to use that promo code CLNS50 to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Bet online, your online sportsbook experts. That's the best segue I had for you, John.
No, it works. It works. How about let's talk about you want to talk about the big game. Let's talk about the other pieces that you need to win the big game, because it's the stars, sure, but you need the bench players to come through, right?
And so we get your eyes on some guys.
Well, I think we got to talk about Aaron Nesmith, or as Jeff Clark is.
Man, you are so in Nesmith's camp, man. You are like in like Flynn. You are
one of it.
I want to get that guy the way I was behind Brown.
Hold on. No. Let's not. We won't get it twisted here. That's Tatum.
It looks that way on Twitter. I'm just saying.
Well, no. Here's the thing, right? I'm kind of sick of the and I feel some pretty good vindication here. Every goddamn year I'm on the Twitter, and every year I have a number of people I go back and forth with about this guy can't do this and he's no good and he can't do it. You know, Rozier is trash. You know, Jalen's never going to be who they think he's going to be. Blah, 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 blah. And we hear this all the time. And I've decided, so I put a Twitter poll up. I'm like, which is it? Who's the worst comparison? Are these people Patinoites or are they Wallace stands? I think it's probably
Wallace stands.
Right? I think these are Wallace stands. I think that, you know, much like the former general manager of the Boston Celtics, Chris Wallace, who sent away Joe Johnson after 4 months so that they could get 3 months out of Roddy Rogers. This is what everyone, you know, they want instant gratification by these draft picks. It doesn't work like that. It takes time. There's a reason why you get a 5-year contract in a rookie deal. You know,
did you make up Wallace stands?
I did.
I love it. That might be the best thing you've come up with on this show in 15 years. Wallace stands is awesome.
That's great.
I do love it.
There you go. Everyone can use it. Just make sure you credit me. No, but like it's true though. Like it's the I'm so tired of that. So yeah, I want to see Nesmith. I want to see Grant. I want to see all these young guys. I want to see them having a chance. And it takes. There's a mental thing for this game. You know what you see when you play 5 minutes in garbage time is not indicative of your talent. It's indicative of where you are currently. But you know, guys need minutes. And so I think we've seen the last two games, you know, Carson Edwards doesn't look like a bum the last two games.
And it's really wild. You know what I think that is, too? When they saw Pritchard come in and have that immediate success, I think it changed. It had to have impacted their mindset.
I don't know. I don't think it's about the other players. I think it's about opportunity that they're given by the coach. And I don't think any of them have had much
opportunity. I thought they got some playing time last year, for sure. Not long stretches, but I mean, even
But look at what happened with Carson Edwards, right? He plays like the first five games of the season, and then after that, it was garbage time, right? There was no role for him at all. You know, it was drive up to
Bucky's Maine. Got a role right now too, though.
You know, I mean that's the thing. I'm not saying anyone deserves a role without earning it. You got to earn it in practice.
He when he got his opportunity, he immediately was ready. Whereas I feel like last year that just wasn't the case.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think as a rookie, I think it takes time for shooters. I don't think shooters. I don't think that they're ready to go when you put them in the NBA game. I think there's, you know, there's a whole bunch of reasons, and you look at a lot of shooters, they don't walk in just lighting it up.
Well, I'll tell you this.
Don't have opportunity.
I'm still not a Carson Edwards believer.
Until they get opportunity, you can't really rely on any of these guys. You're getting it in other places. You're not getting it here in Boston because we're trying to win, you know? You're going to get opportunity in Sacramento. You're going to get opportunity in Charlotte. You're going to get opportunity in, you know, these places. You're not going to get it here. Brad wants to win, man. The Celtics want to win games. That's the deal.
I think your point is well taken. And I think Neesmith is going to work out just fine. Lots of effort on defense. You know, the shot's starting to fall. He's going to need some minutes to develop. It's the same issue, though, that we just talked about with Brown and Tatum. There's just only going to be, you know, so much opportunity to develop certain players. But I just, you know, I don't think we've seen guys leave the Celtics that didn't get ample opportunity that have wound up going, you know, somewhere else and, you know, carving out solid minutes. Orion Green would be an example going back a ways. But, you know, I don't think Carson Edwards ends up carving out this gigantic Tim Frazier-like opportunity, you know, if he doesn't get one here. I personally don't see that in general. But your point's well taken, and I think that's the case for a lot of players. And, you know, we can go back to last season and talk about Romeo Langford, who, you know, came in with an awkward shot and had to have a ping-pong paddle attached to his hand and, you know, all these things and all these challenges. And then all of a sudden, you know, we're heading down the stretch, and maybe even before they shut things down, we started to see it. And here's a guy who starts knocking down the three-pointer and playing really solid defense. But, as you know, with teams, as you said, Brad Stevens wants to win. They win by getting guys to play solid defense, and that's how they earn their minutes. You and I have had that conversation here before, but somebody like Langford earns it. And then all of a sudden he's hitting, you know, big time three pointers in the corner and doing what he needs to do. I guess my thing is, when are we going to see him? Because there's still guys on this club who, to your point about Carson Edwards, are no longer, you know, in their rookie year, et cetera. There's a guy, I think, you know, along with Neesmith, two different types of skill sets that are probably actually quite complementary. Would be great to see them, you know, play off of each other, but is there any word on when we're going to see Langford?
Well, he's working out pregame, and I'm not sure he's cleared fully for full contact yet, but I don't think he's that far away. You know, my guess is he's not, you know, I think it's probably a matter of weeks, not months. You know, I'm guessing we'll see him sometime in February at this point.
What do you think that's going to do to somebody like Neesmith? Because you talk about all they keep talking about is there's the guy who's shooting the three and busting the zone down. You know, I don't think that's really Langford's role.
No.
You know, where do those – does he cut into Ogilvy, who's starting to prove himself? Like, where do these wing minutes come from, you know, once Langford comes back?
Well, the thing is, you know, Ogilvy and I would also say, you know, you're also probably looking at Javonte as well.
Yeah.
I mean, that's both of those guys are probably going to see a cut or if not outright loss of all minutes, but probably more in Javonte's case than anything. But, you know, look, I don't think that that's a problem, frankly. I mean, that's you want to see, you know,
you want that depth because right. You've got guys like Green who probably can do some spot minutes, you know, if they have to suffer through some injuries again.
Right. And that's, you know, I think the thing is, the difference now is those guys are going to the bench feeling good about themselves, right? You know, that's the thing is, you know, what you saw with some of these teams that have been deep that we've gone up against in the past couple of years, whether it's, you know, Miami or Milwaukee, you know, the guys that are coming in feel good coming in. I don't think the Celtics bench has really felt that way. You know, so if they can keep this train rolling for guys like Semi Ojeleye and Javante, who's using a lot of energy when he's out there, you know, if Romeo can somehow find a lane and kind of carve out a niche for himself, you know, that's the thing, right? So then Brad actually has options. We started this year, probably the first 8-10 games of the season, I'd say Brad had no options. I mean, people were complaining about rotations. There's a lot of bad options for Brad Stevens.
Well, even you know? The Tyson-Thompson experiment, it was born exactly. out of necessity. Although, I think it's helped Tice. I think Tice getting put into a spot where he needs to shoot to space the floor has actually helped him be a more effective shooter. And maybe that goes back to the – because, I mean, it was killing me early. You know, I was like, dude, this guy is just not hitting the threes. It's painful. It's painful to watch. I feel bad for him. And, you know, but now it's like he can hit them.
I think you're right. Because I think it was a lot of confidence issues. I mean, how many times did we see him passing up shots against Philly last year, you know, or Toronto in that playoff? I think that's a big thing. And here's the other piece of this, right? The Celtics are in a point where, you know, if they're playing the way they're playing and the way I think people are looking at this team, they got to be looking at what's going to happen on the other conference. I mean, you got to have an eye on that. I'm not saying that they're, you build to that, but you got to have an eye on the other conference. And anyone who saw that finals knows LeBron and AD, you've got to be dealt with. And you can't go small against LA unless you really can find a way to make those guys work on defense. And so I understand why the Celtics are really trying to make this double big lineup work. I get it. I get it now. You know, will it be
It's still not going to work, but hopefully it'll work better than right. if they didn't even try it.
That's exactly right. The more options that Brad has available to him, the better everyone is, better off everyone
are
is.
Are you 100%, not maybe 100%, but are you basically locked in on LA is almost assuredly coming out of the West?
Yeah, unless there's an injury. There's no other way anyone else will. I think I don't see Denver's not it. I don't think the Clippers. I just. Lakers are just playing so well. This is like – it's like 09 right now to me. This is like the Celtics in 09 where they came off that win and it just like they've – the Lakers have – you know, they're just taking off where they left off in the finals, you know. The problem is it's really hard to do that. And this – the way this calendar works, it's tough. And, you know, 36-year-old LeBron James – you know, Anthony Davis has had a history of injuries. I'm not rooting for injuries. I'm just saying, like, that's...
Yeah, it's always tentative. Yep.
With only one of those guys, that team looks a lot different. So, you know, the Celtics were to lose Brown or to lose Tatum, it would be devastating. But I think they'd have more of a chance to compete, relatively, than if the Lakers were to lose one of LeBron or AD. And then they're a very different team.
Yeah, but I don't see the Celtics going to the finals with one of those injuries.
I don't think either Kemba, one.
They need Kemba to be 100% or not playing, right? He can't be middle ground Kemba.
Well, yeah, that's a great point. Like, honestly, that's all this stuff going on. I think that's the biggest – that might be the biggest point of the last week. The best thing that could have happened, because the burst and the explosion that we saw in the first half of last year seems like it's back.
Now, like I forgot it existed, to be honest with you, because we saw him playing without it so much, and then we had that huge gap. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I know there's always recency bias, but dude.
I mean, will it be back in a month? We don't know. But it's back now, and we didn't see that at all in the bubble when he had a whole bunch of time off. So it looks like the whatever the injection there in his knee, he got the good Kobe stuff from Germany or whatever it was, and so he looks good.
It's got to be stem cells, lots of them.
That's what we're calling it, right? Okay, cool.
Stem cells, steroids, baby.
I'm happy with it. No bone on bone. We're in a good spot.
Shark cartilage.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Right. Just to be taken orally.
Just inject it right into the knee. So yeah, I you know that's gonna be the.
nobody remembers bone on bone. There's a handful of listeners that remember the bone on bone. We bring it up from time to time.
We do. But that guy's not even working right now, and so who the heck knows what's going on?
Yeah.
But, I'm pumped. I mean, I'm really pumped about Kemba. I think that's keeping him healthy, keeping him looking like this Kemba, keeping him fresh. If they can, you know, and we dodged a big bullet with Pritchard, because with Pritchard healthy, and certainly he'll be coming back and all that, they can find time where they can rest Kemba, you know, not worry about those back-to-backs, not worry about all that, because you still can throw a point guard in, you know, maybe you bump Smart over and all that, but, you know, you're not losing anything. You're not running just to Jeff Teague, who it's just, I don't know. It's not there, you know.
Seriously, what happened to him? But
I think he's just not. I think you need a guy like him on your bench. You know, I think you need vets. I think you need guys to fill.
Could be one of those guys that all of a sudden shows up in the postseason when they
totally. Yeah, I mean, I think
it's not falling for him, and I don't understand it. Like, is he doing anything different than he used to? Just seems so weird. And a lot of them are just kind of going into the rim and coming back out. I mean, there's some really sloppy stuff that's occurring too, but he's obviously a volume guy, and that's probably the biggest issue, you know, is volume guys need volume to stay in a groove. And I'm not sure that he's getting enough volume night in and night out. And I'm sure he's lost a step at age 32 as well.
Absolutely.
But
yeah. That's the thing to me is his speed. He was a pretty quick player, and it just doesn't seem like he has that same burst, you know. But the good.
What do we got? What kind of shark treatments can we give this guy?
Yeah, right. But I'm okay with him being the back of the bench. I mean, we clearly have that guy in Peyton Pritchard who can play ahead of him
in case of emergency.
Totally. No. So you know, the more guys. I'm not saying you want to fill out your bench with a bunch of Jeff Teagues, you know, at different positions, but there's value to having veterans on this bench who are providing sage, you know, wisdom and can come in and give you a couple minutes maybe, but really they're not the basis of your team. You know, you've got young players like Pritchard or like Ogilvy or like Javonte or Romeo who've stepped up, and they're your players who you're relying upon. That's to me. That's the ideal world for Danny Ainge and for Brad Stevens.
All right, I think we're just about at the end of the show. Do you want to talk about NBC Sports or not?
You can. Go ahead.
I don't know. Like, what happens at this point? You know what I mean? Like, what happens at this point?
Well, what do you mean? You mean how they're closing the national network, you mean?
Yeah, yeah. Is it just everything becomes regionally owned and that's that?
Well, it has been. I mean, the idea of the closing down the national network, the idea is to move everything to Peacock or to, you know, USA. Or I don't think that's going to change the regional sports nets because they're still not wholly owned by NBC. They're still local ownership. Like the Celtics own a good part of NBC Sports Boston. So I don't think that's going to impact the situation.
You know, maybe I didn't totally understand it, but I was really hoping it would impact the blackout stuff. You know, or why not just let me, get a subscription from the local network and pay for it. You know what I mean? Stop limiting me.
Yeah.
I want to see the NBC Sports Boston programming outside of New England, and you can't get it without an illegal feed. You know, even when I got YouTube TV, it's like they're making me be locked into this Philadelphia market, and it's like I didn't grow up here. Let me tell the people who are in charge of this stupid asinine stuff.
Get them.
You're not making me watch the pre and post game show on NBC Sports Philly. I'm not watching it. You know, so you're not getting more viewers, you're getting less viewers. Or you're getting the same amount of viewers, but you're getting less viewers in another market. I mean, are they really worried that there's going to be, like, they're going to steal fans from Philly to start watching this content, you know, in Boston? It makes me bananas, dude. Why can't I subscribe to that network and get their programming? And yeah, I can't do it.
That's foolish. I mean,
maybe you're going to tell me I'm not missing anything, but like every once in a while, I see our friend, old friend Chris Forsberg, you know, doing, and they're like, yeah, at halftime, we're going to go talk to, you know, Abby and Perk, you know, and I don't get to see that. I got to watch, you know, the halftime show, which is so stupid. It's so stupid.
Yeah, I would probably say we are it's less impactful than ever. The good times are not quite as good as they used to be. Scal has really created a lot of hate and discontent out there in the Twitter world, and I kind of agree with a lot of it. He's really this is a moment, really, without Tommy, that's tough. You know, I think we're all missing Tommy and what he provided. But, you know, the gap just seems wider between what he does and what Scal is doing. And I think that's been probably the biggest story so far this year, is just Scal kind of being at times antagonistic towards Abby, not really understanding what that's about. Just seems kind of bizarre.
To have coffee together on Facebook.
Right. And I don't know if he thinks it's funny or it just comes off like a real a-hole.
Well, it's all the manufactured drama stuff. You know what I mean?
They
could even be coordinating it. You know, the network could be saying, you know, this is kind of what we need. And so, you know, Abby and Scal, you know, kind of work it out. Somebody's got to be a bad guy, right? Or something. Maybe we need some negative attention. You know, who knows what could be going. I'm not accusing the network of doing that. I'm just saying there are lots of reasons in today's media that those kinds of things happen, and they may not be. I'm sure that Scal has plenty of asshole in him, but it may not simply be him being an asshole. There could be a lot of ratings manufacturing and strategery going on there.
Right. Strategery. Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, there's certainly reasons why it makes sense.
It doesn't make sense.
Well,
what might explain it?
It makes dollars and cents. How about that?
All right. There you go. Like that.
Good. But it's not an enjoyable watch. Let me just say that. You know, I just think that with Tommy's absence, they needed to find a way to change Scal's role just a little bit. We're not looking for Johnny Most, but you know, there's this idea that somehow it's tainted to be a homer. But you know,
nobody out of your region can watch it anyway.
There you go.
If the whole business model is to force people to be a fan, why would you be a chump? Why wouldn't you be, you know, a homer and lead the charge in that way? It doesn't even line up, dude. It doesn't even line up. Why are you being antagonistic when you're trying to brainwash a region to follow your team?
Well, that's the thing. That's the whole thing to me is like this is your audience. So making them hate you really is not making people want to watch the games. People want to like the people who are calling the games. And there's no problem on that.
You're going to spend how many hours? Think about it. It's what, right. 2.5 hours a game? Right. And let's say you only watch, 60 games, right? Yes. How many hours of viewership is that? It's 2 hours times 120 hours plus another 30. It's 150 hours of viewing time. How many days is that? If you were actually – it's 6 days, 7 days.
Right.
It's 7 days of your life you are spending as if you weren't sleeping. That's not even waking days. That's right. 7 full days, no sleep of your life that you're spending with these people. Why would you want to be bitter? And especially in a world that has just so many other great reasons to be bitter. Like, we're looking for an escape in this. Give us the escape.
And
give us a reason to have a smile in the evening, for God's sakes.
That's right. And I don't, Mike Gorman is, there's a lot of fans on, there's two big fans of Mike Gorman on this show and have been for many, many years. And that nothing's changed in that regard. But somehow the Celtics need to find a way, or I should say the Celtics broadcast needs to find a way to kind of get to Scal and just say, look, man, we got to find a way to make you a little bit more likable here, because I want to give him a shot. I want him to have an opportunity here. It feels like it's the Scal show, to be honest. They used to have, and maybe
a lot of money in one basket, right?
Yeah. Now. Yeah. And when that gamble's not working out for you, it's a lot of, they have this thing in the post game and the pregame where, they bring in Tom Giles in for like just one little hit to talk about betting odds. It's very disjointed. I don't understand it. I miss the old, weird Celtics Twitter stuff that they did. I I never could make any of those memes or anything like that, but damn, I mean, that was fun, good stuff. It was organic. It felt natural. And it just right now it's just not the same.
Everybody's scared, dude. Everybody's
maybe
scared.
Maybe that's it. Yeah.
Everybody is scared for a lot of reasons in our society, and they're scared for their jobs, and they're, there's a lot of odd dynamics that are probably coming to play that, it's unfortunate because this is, the league got this product back on the court, and it really should be an escape. And with that, I'm escaping this topic and the show.
Oh!
That's going to do it for this week's show. As a reminder, you can follow Celtic Stuff Live on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. We'd certainly appreciate a rating and a review because your feedback is important to the show. And for John and myself, just want to thank you for listening to this week's episode of Celtic Stuff Live.